Our next case is 12-2113, Christian Daniel versus Sean Daniel. We have only the appellant who will argue this morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor and Honorable Justice of the Court. My name is James Tesno, and I have the privilege and honor of representing the appellant, Christian Daniel, in this matter. I wish to thank the Court for giving me the high honor of presenting this issue before the Court, which is whether or not a trial court should make orders dividing unvested military retirement benefits in a divorce situation. Your Honors, we submit that the only logical answer to this question is yes, and that the action of the trial court in refusing to divide the benefits in any way was totally unconscionable. The facts of this case are very simple as it relates to this issue. The parties were married in 1995. They were separated in 2008. The divorce took place in 2011. During the marriage, the appellee was either on active military duty or was a member of the Ohio National Guard. And during the marriage, he earned 16 years of retirement benefits for the military. Of those, 13 were acquired during the period of time before the parties separated. He had also re-enlisted for an additional 6 years prior to the time of the divorce. This is all relevant to the facts of this case because military retirement benefits do not vest until 20 years of
Counsel, I'm over to your right.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Counsel, you used the word unconscionable.
Yes, sir.
It means it shocks the conscience.
Sir.
Would it have the same outcome if this was a vested military retirement?
Yes, sir. It would, Your Honor.
So you see no distinction between unvested and vested?
None at all, Your Honor. If
Why?
If the retirement benefits are vested, they were acquired during the marriage. The court, this court, and all courts in Ohio following these courts' decisions have treated retirement benefits more as deferred compensation. In other words, if they were not given military or retirement benefits of any type, in all likelihood, there would have been higher wages, other benefits, the parties would have had a better standard of living, perhaps bought more assets to be divided during the divorce. In the situation of unvested benefits, if they never vest, there's nothing to be divided between either spouse. But if they vest, some spouse will get the entire benefit of those if you accept the court's decision in this case, and one spouse will receive nothing. Your Honor, if the
I did the math. If you excuse me, when
yes,
I was
sir.
Reading your brief, 16 years is 80% of 20 years.
That's correct.
There's
Your Honor.
Two people. So is it your position to make it? We're using double negatives this morning. Not unconscionable. Are you suggesting that a military spouse, therefore, in this situation, is entitled to 40% of that which does vest?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But counsel, have you really asked? I'm on the other end.
Yes, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Have you asked for that specifically in your proposition? As I take it, your proposition is they are subject to division. So a trial court would then have discretion to decide what would be equitable. And in some situations, a trial court, for example, might decide, I'm not going to give a wife anything relating to retirement benefits because I'm going to make an equitable decision or an equitable distribution by giving her other benefits. So if you were to win on your proposition, would we not have to send it back to the trial court to make an equitable division of property, including the retirement benefits that may have not yet vested?
If it pleases the court, Your Honor, in theory, yes, in practicality, no. Section 3105.071 does give the trial court the discretion to determine an equitable division. This court has ruled that equitable does not always mean equal. The trial court has to determine that. In the specific facts of this case, however, the parties entered into a separation agreement dividing what little assets they had. The only asset of the marriage to be divided in reality were these benefits. They had some furniture, a couple motor vehicles, but there were no major assets to be divided other than the benefits in this case. We submitted to the trial court in our objection, in oral argument, I'm sorry, we submitted to the trial court in closing and to the judge at the trial court in our objections and also the Court of Appeals what has been described as the coverture factor, which is the formula where the court can divide, determine the number of years of the marriage divided by the number of years of military service, and then that could be applied to whatever benefits are available. The court in any given situation does not necessarily have to say that the date of marriage is from the date they walked down the aisle until the date they walked into the courtroom. And specifically in this case, we would acknowledge that the party separated 3 years before the trial court heard the divorce itself. So of the 16 years of benefits, in reality, 13 years were really during the actual marriage of these parties, even though.
But what remedy are you asking for from us?
We are asking this matter to be remanded to the trial court to specifically say that the military retirement benefits must be considered and divided appropriately.
Okay.
In this case, Your Honor, the trial court said that since these benefits were invested, it could not make any decision at all. So it never addressed what is an appropriate division, since it felt that it couldn't address that issue
at all.
But
was there evidence submitted in this case that would have allowed the trial court to even take that into consideration? My concern is, number one, we only have you arguing here, and we don't have opposing counsel. That's no fault of yours. I understand that. But at trial, there was a subpoena to round out this issue for the magistrate to consider, and it was not presented. And there was no opportunity to get into the nuts and bolts of what this pension or benefit was for this soldier. So do we have the record before us, or is this just a simple case of there was a failure to present evidence at the trial level? The magistrate took that into consideration, said, I don't have enough here to give you what you want.
Thank you, Chief Justice. First of all, when it comes to the question of the evidence, yes, I believe there was sufficient evidence presented at the trial court.
There was
level.
Sufficient. From
yes.
Whom?
From the appellant and also the appellee on the witness stand, also on his testimony, Your Honor.
What did he say that allowed the calculation of numbers and years and vesting and all that? It seems to me, at least from what I read by the filing here, is it was pretty nebulous.
Okay. Your Honor, I believe it was the testimony was the parties were married in 2005, separated in 2008. That established 13 years of marriage.
2005 to 2008?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, 1995 to 2000.
Okay,
I'm
and
sorry.
He had been a member of the military prior to the marriage?
For a couple months, yes, Your Honor.
And then there was, you know, testimony about time apart, time together, that sort of thing. He was unsure how many years was in the tally for his pension.
Your Honor, at one point in time, he said he was unsure. At another point in the record, he said he was positive how many years. So there was testimony given both ways. The trial court.
Was there a dollar amount attached?
No, Your Honor.
Was that asked? And he said, I don't know.
That's correct, Your Honor, which is where the formula comes into play. In most retirement benefits, there is not a dollar amount attached at the trial level. It is just the person is going to be eligible for benefits, and the court makes a formula and then orders the pension plan administrator in a civilian case or the military in a military case to then use that formula to divide the benefits. Your Honor, if
but
I might.
But isn't there more testimony given at the trial of that issue of whether or not, number one, that's an asset to be divided and how it is established? Isn't that, don't you need, you know, someone with authority to bring, or an expert or a witness that here attempted to subpoena somebody from what, the payroll division of the military or the command division of the military to come in and relay this information, and that failed?
The command division, that's correct, Your Honor. It did not fail, if I might. The subpoena was served, but the return of service was not filed until after the hearing. The person did not appear in response to that subpoena. We took all proper efforts to have that person appear. And I think that the court was wrong in not granting us a continuance. However, that issue was not accepted by the court for argument here. But I believe, Your Honor, we could have presented more evidence and should have been permitted to present more evidence. But we presented enough evidence to answer the question for the court. Chief Justice, you asked about, I don't want to paraphrase what your question was, but something to the effect that the trial court considered the lack of evidence and therefore ruled appropriately. The trial court did not consider the lack of evidence. Specifically, the magistrate ruled that the court did not have the ability to determine unvested military retirement benefits division, and therefore she didn't go any further. Had she said, I don't think the evidence is there, that would have been an issue that we could have argued, but that issue was never breached because she never got to that stage because she stopped her analysis when she said, I can't divide those benefits.
But the Court of Appeals ruled that there was no abuse of discretion because there was no evidence in connection with Proffered Exhibit 17, and it was unclear from the record, according to the Court of Appeals, whether or not the pension was based on years of service or points earned during a service or a combination. And therefore, the conclusion of the appellate court was no abuse of discretion by failing to divide the unvested pension.
That is correct. That is.
And it is an abuse of discretion standard, is it not?
That is correct, Justice O'Donnell. That is what the Court of Appeals ruled in a 2-1 decision. I would submit that Judge Wilmowski, in his very strongly worded dissent, I think probably the strongestly worded dissent I've seen from him ever, hit the nail on the head. But the issue that the Court of Appeals decided this on was not argued. It was never assigned as an assignment of error. It was not briefed. They went off on a tangent and ruled on the issue that was not presented to them and which this court did not accept jurisdiction to determine. The Court of Appeals did not determine whether or not it was unconscionable for the trial court to refuse to determine the division.
Let me ask you a larger question. The statute that I'm looking at says 3105.17.171C directs the court to make divisions of property, and the legislature uses this language. All real and personal property that currently is owned by either or both spouses. And then it says, in not limited to retirement benefits. And in subsection 2, it says, all interest that either or both spouses currently has.
Yes, Your Honor.
Aren't these retirement benefits future interests?
They're
not present interests.
They are present interests in the term that they are acquired during the marriage. They may not be able to be received.
But it's not a present interest. It's a future interest, isn't it?
Your Honor, it's a future interest in the same vein that any retirement benefit is a future interest before the person retires.
Except we're supposed to interpret the language used by the General Assembly, which says it is a current interest owned by either spouse. And in this instance, neither party has a current interest. It's a future interest, which will vest in 4 years.
That's correct, Your Honor. But in 3105.071, Section 10 also states the courts consider all other relevant and equitable matters, and it describes marital property as all interest. It doesn't say future interest, present interest. It says all interest that either spouse has in property, including retirement benefits acquired during the marriage. We submit that these are benefits acquired during the marriage and therefore fit under the province of 3105.071.
And case law includes unvested interest as well as vested.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Although isn't that a point of dispute, as the Court of Appeals decision states, that this is a question that's up in the air? I mean, if we are to be determining whether unvested pension should be included, and there's authority on either side, it's a little unfortunate, as the Chief pointed out, that we don't have the opposing argument in front of us to make that particular decision.
Yes, Justice Langsger. If I might, I don't believe that the case law in Ohio is up in the air. The Seiler decision and the Lemon decisions, both cited in my brief, both stand for the proposition that the courts have the ability to divide unvested retirement benefits. Seiler is specifically on point. It was a 15-year military Air Force deployment. Had not vested at the time of the divorce, and the court specifically said, I believe it was the 12th District, if I'm not mistaken, specifically said that those are benefits that could be divided.
Counsel, I guess that's the question. I'm over to your right.
I'm sorry,
again.
Your Honor. I apologize.
It's a big panel. I guess what I'm hearing, and I'd like to know your position, it seems to me that this case is a very narrow case. Aren't you asking this court to rule yes or no on a member of the military who's short of 20 years do they or do they not have a property interest as a marital asset in their pension?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Isn't that really the only question before this court?
That is the only question before this court, Your Honor.
And we have not addressed that, have we?
Your Honor, only by
when I say dicta. We, I'm talking about we seven.
By dicta, Your Honor. There was a Wilson case, and I've not cited that in my brief, in which the question dealt with the ability to whether the court could issue a qualified domestic relations order, what we call a quadro, if it was unvested benefits, and the court said you could. So by implication, the court has addressed that issue.
And you're telling me the service member here did testify that he had either 15 or 16 years?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And the trial court chose not to view it as a marital asset?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And the Court of Appeals said, well, there's just not enough math here for us to deal with this, and besides, there's IRAs. And I got very confused when they started going down that road.
I did also, Your Honor, but that is correct. I think what they were saying is, since he cashed in some IRAs and used that money during the marriage, which he testified he didn't support the family while he was not deployed, but somehow if he cashed those in, somehow that offset, and I don't understand that either, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, counsel,
yes, Your Honor.
This military pension, that is subject to being divested. I mean, it wasn't vested with him, but it's also subject to being totally unavailable to him. For example, if he were court-martialed or had some kind of activity that would, while in the military and military-related, he would lose it, correct?
That is correct, Chief Justice. That is correct. I mean, he could stand to lose it. He could quit. I mean, if he's
right, and not reach 20, and
right,
then, you know.
Right. So for a number of reasons, he could never vest. But at that point in time, he'll receive nothing.
Right. But my point is that it's a little different. A military pension here is a little different from, you know, your pension with your company that, you know, if you quit, in most instances, it's vested after X amount of years, usually five, or, you know, the same thing with the government, you know. But let's look at Social Security. There's some, my understanding is if a couple had been married 10 years and then divorced 20 years later when the ex-husband retires, the wife is entitled to Social Security benefits. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. So that's a case where he can't defeat that by quitting. He can't defeat. That's a totally different type of vesting and a totally different type of entitlement that we don't have here.
That is correct, Chief Justice. Your Honor.
And my concern is that, you know, there's various types of vesting. There's various occasions that trigger vesting. There's various opportunities to either cash in or, you know, as you said, in the military here, quit and then not be entitled at all. All of that was never laid out by anybody with knowledge before the magistrate to allow that. And certainly one would think that the commanding officer, had they been present at the hearing, could have answered some of the questions that are left unanswered here. But based on the evidence before the court, in the magistrate's hearing, the appeal to the trial judge, and then to the Court of Appeals, based on that evidence, the Court of Appeals said, we don't find abuse of discretion on behalf of the magistrate. And I'm concerned, as I mentioned earlier, that we don't have a good record to go on, that we don't have both sides arguing here, and that you're asking us to make a stand here that is going to be universally applied to, I believe there's about 40,000 military individuals, stationed in Ohio, employed in Ohio between the reserve and the active. That's a pretty big impact on a group of, you know, presuming we're talking about them and their spouses, there's 80,000 people, theoretically, and families. I just don't know this is the case to make that kind of law.
Your Honor, Chief Justice, I understand your concern. I think the answer to that is very simple, though. With, as you mentioned, civilian benefits, other benefits, they all vest at some point in time. Whether we're talking military retirement benefits or a person who works for the sewer department or whatever, there's going to be a vesting period. If for whatever reason they don't vest, both spouses get zero. But if they vest, it is inequitable to allow one spouse to receive 100% of those benefits that were acquired during the marriage. If we're going to look at retirement
benefits. Not necessarily. You're saying that as a rule of law, it's inequitable and it is unconscionable. But that's not necessarily so, because there are set-offs that can be employed in the formulation of what's equitable and what's necessary under that set of circumstances.
But Chief Justice, to take a black and white rule and say you can't consider those at all doesn't allow the set-offs.
Well, there's an alternative here that, you know, this case stays just as a rule of law for this particular case, and we wait for a better case to come along at some point, if there is one, where it can be argued and the record's better. And this is an improvidently allowed case at that point.
Your Honor, I don't know if it's improvidently allowed when you look at the effect it's going to have on these specific people.
But that's not, you know, we're not making law here. We're not hearing cases specifically for this particular set of ex-spouses.
Yes, Your Honor.
Our role has to be, you know, obviously taken into consideration the impact of a rule of law that would be handed down by this court and applied by all of the domestic relations courts in the state. So, you know, unfortunately, we can never be concerned about just Mr. and Mrs. Daniels. This is a much bigger issue.
I understand, Chief Justice, but I submit that still, considering the law as it stands today, this court, this case does give the court the opportunity to specify what would happen in such a situation. I feel the record is adequate for
well,
the court.
Well, counsel, it isn't the problem that the trial court said or concluded, I don't have any authority to do anything about a non-vested pension.
That's correct, Justice Pfeiffer.
That was the conclusion.
That was the conclusion. The court said because they are unvested benefits, the court could not consider anything further.
There isn't any case law that says that, is there?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Right.
No case law, nor no statutory law. If I might, Your Honor, one last point. You know, as I walked in the courtroom this morning, and I'm always so impressed with this courtroom, and I looked around at the murals and the history of Ohio and almost over the military. And the one thing I don't see there are the spouses. But the spouses are behind the soldiers, behind the military. And to make a rule that benefits acquired during marriage are not to be divided is just wrong. Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?